Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Football Monday on WGR. It's the playoffs, the Bills and Broncos Sunday at 1. Eric Wood joining us now. Eric, and I don't blame him for this. This is not a criticism of him. Will occasionally, you know, sort of sneak in a point about how we don't listen to the games. but we always catch, Eric, the end, like when you guys are signing off. And I'm telling you, like, that Gillette Stadium sounds like a nightmare to me. How close are the fans to you, and is that not a constant distraction?
It is definitely a distraction. I mean, some of them are within maybe 5 feet of us, and we're just above them, so maybe we... you know, what would be about being like two rows behind someone in the stadium, about that level, is about how much higher we are than them. And yes, but even from a fan perspective, like, I wouldn't want to be a Patriots fan and listen to the Bills broadcast in my ear the entire game, as, you know, we've had a lot of success there recently, you know, and
yep.
We're celebrating Josh Allen plays. I feel for them as well, but inevitably there's going to be someone throughout the game that likely has had too much to drink prior in the parking lot and gets in our face a little bit. You know, they start chirping us and messing with us. And I thought I was in the the weird one that couldn't get over it, but I hear that Kelso was also perturbed by them messing with him in the past, and he is a very mild-mannered man, much calmer than I am, yeah. So I don't feel quite as bad anymore.
How, if you don't mind telling us, if there's any kind of a juicy answer, like how I don't know, how close has it ever gotten to, like, you know, you're going to call security, or, you know, what's the tense it ever got up there?
Les, I'll be completely honest. 2 years ago, I almost had my buddy come over, and I didn't want him to hit anybody. Just come over and say something. This guy was pestering me as I'm just trying to do my job. Mm-hmm. He's videoing me. He's messing with me. He's making faces at me. He's calling me names during breaks, and you know, just too much.
Right.
To the point where it got to the point where I'm like, look, buddy, I know I'm a public figure and you think, or maybe know, that I can do nothing in retaliation to you. But I was very close to having one of my buddies come over and just do a little bit of an intimidation factor. But
right.
I made the better decision. I'll give my wife credit probably for that one.
All right.
Can you close a window?
In some stadiums, but the way the booth's set up there, by the time I get to the stadium, the way we got to set it up, that window is open. And it generally leads to a better broadcast. It creates more energy mm-hmm. for me and Chris to be a part of it. I mean, there's nothing worse than being 8 stories up in Kansas City with a closed-off booth. You feel like you could probably call the game better just watching on TV.
So what was the crowd like yesterday? I mean, the CBS guys were pretty much obsessed with it, how the fans were...
what were they doing? Booing the Patriots? Good plays? I don't know. Like, it must have been a weird atmosphere.
It was, because at times they would, you know, Josh Allen goes out there, they cheer, he comes off after one play, and they boo, but they're not booing Josh Allen, the player, they're booing the fact that he's not going to go out there and rack up points on them to try and help them get the number one pick. And it was a mixed crowd. Some were cheering for the Patriots to score, to win, and then others were booing, understanding the ramifications of it. And look, the Patriots did all they could. They played their third-string quarterback. Now, he went out and had a heck of a day and likely made himself some money moving forward. Not saying he'll go be a starting quarterback, but if Jacoby Brissett's not back next year, he's likely the backup. If they do bring, you know, a more of a veteran presence in there for Drake May, he's likely a piece that they could move next year and maybe get some money based upon, or maybe get some draft capital or whatever it is based upon how he played yesterday. But they played their third-string quarterback. You know, Christian Gonzalez, the best player on their team, was out for the game with concussion. Their starting center was out with a concussion. I mean, they had a lot of pieces that weren't out there. But unfortunately for them, they got the job done.
Right. How odd did you find it, if you found it out at all, that May played one series in this game? Like, I get them wanting to get Milton on the field from whatever their motivation would have been for that. You know, lose the game, get the number one pick, let him air it out and see if he can establish some sort of value for himself, like you just alluded to, and maybe they can turn that into something as we move into the spring, whatever. But May for a series was weird. Like, we all understand Josh has got a streak going. I mean, May just started this year. I guess if you want to start a streak from when he entered the lineup this year, fine. But I don't know. It was just weird to me that they played him one series.
Right. You know, I would have assumed you just give Milton a start, and if need be, you put Drake May in there. I guess it's maybe just to give him the honor of getting the start for the game, get him a few reps out there. From my understanding, with talking to some folks in New England, you know, the main thing is they wanted him to be able to develop this offseason and not take a risk of injury, which any quarterback that plays behind that Patriots offensive line this season is at risk of injury. Now, Drake May, incredible mobility in the pocket. Milton had the same yesterday, was able to avoid a number of hits and sacks in the pocket. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, they like what they have in Drake May. They've seen enough this year. They don't need necessarily one extra game at the end of the year playing against a number of Buffalo's backups and a very vanilla game plan to make any further judgments on him. So that essentially it's to keep him healthy. But I'm with you, Bulldog. Why even play him one series then? Because he didn't take a big shot from Von Miller.
Right.
In my understanding as well was, you know, they told him, you know, it's third and long. Don't take a big shot here.
Worked for Von.
Exactly.
I guess it worked for him. One more on New England and yesterday. I think it would be the first postgame show we've ever done where a coach was fired before the show was over. Were you sensing that was going to happen? Do you think it? I don't. Do you think it was because they won the game? Like, was the feeling in the air that might happen even quickly?
You know, no, not necessarily. I was with a number of their coaches before the game. Alex Van Pelt's a good friend of mine. Bob Bicknell coached with us in Buffalo. Joe Kim, their defensive line specialist, he coached with us in Buffalo. Robert Kugler, my old offensive line coach. Sean Cougar's son's on staff. So I'm over on New England sideline catching up with a bunch of guys. I know a few of their players. And that wasn't the feeling. The feeling was, hey, yes, this season sucked. We kind of knew it from the jump just based upon talent. But we think we got this quarterback for the future. Can't wait to develop him and utilize all this cap space, most cap space in the league heading into the offseason. You know, top five draft pick now, not number one, but you have this serious draft capital, and then they fire him after 1 year, which, I mean, that's just a tough deal. It's not a good look for the franchise either. Right. You know, that's the type of deal, and this is me talking to some coaches around the league, and I'm not going to name names, but when you do something like that, because I asked them, I said, what does that show other coaches? And it says, well, you got to be really careful going to a place like that because, you know, they're moving on from a guy after 1 year. You move your family there, you might not get a shot to actually prove what you can do as a coaching staff. And so that's a tough look with Van Pelt in the parking lot after the game. I had already planned to meet him and tailgate with him and Kugler and a few guys after the game, and then ended up being a pretty crappy situation with, you know, him being rightfully upset.
What do you think did Mayo in? I know the owner talked today about feeling some regret about putting him into a position that maybe, to paraphrase, he ends up not being really ready for. I mean, that can be a lot of things that you might know better than me, you know, knowing all these people on the staff, like behind the scenes, command of the room, leader of men, all that kind of stuff. I just don't think we've talked about this before. On Sundays after games, he's stepped in it numerous times. Like, I don't know if that's enough to get you fired. I imagine it's more like, you know, trusting that he's got what it takes to lead you where you want to go ultimately. But I think he embarrassed the franchise numerous times this year.
He did, and I'm sure that played a role into it. You know, handling the media and representing your organization is part of being the head coach, the CEO, the person that's front and center at all times, that's on the microphone multiple times a week, and you want him to be representing your franchise in a positive light, and he wasn't always doing that. Now, Gerard Mayo is a player, as a leader, from what I understand, in that locker room, and even transitioning into coaches, he got a lot of respect in the building, but as a head coach, you know, I don't want to make any assumptions not being behind the scenes there, but I know that the guys liked working with him, and he's got a strong reputation in this league. I assume he lands on his feet. Obviously, it's going to be a step down, whether that's a position coach or maybe a coordinator somewhere. But, you know, maybe he gets another shot one day. But there's a lot of guys in this league that are great coordinators and not necessarily a great head coach. And if and look, I know it's one season. I'm kind of talking out both sides of my mouth. But if you know that he's not your guy after year one, it sucks for everyone involved. It probably doesn't give you a good look of your franchise, you know, a good representation of you as an owner. But you got to move on, because you only got Drake May for so many years before you got to really pay this guy. And these are the times where you could really capitalize when you got a cheap quarterback.
With Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline, the Bills and the Denver Broncos Sunday at 1 here on WGR in the wild card round. Well, before we get specific to Denver, and I know we talked about them a little bit last week, anticipating this possible matchup, your thoughts, Eric, on just sort of what the Bills are going into this postseason? I mean, it's been about as clean of a season as they could have wanted. Just not good enough for the one, but what can you do? Sometimes they beat the Chiefs. The Chiefs just went ahead and only lost two games. Are you all the way, like, do you feel great about their chances to make a run, or is there something maybe in your head that slows you down?
You know, I have a lot of confidence just because I've seen it over and over what Josh can do in the playoffs. He continually puts on a show, one of the highest quarterback ratings of all time in the playoffs. I don't have any reservations about that. Defensively, you know, there's times where, whether it be the safety position — I'm not referring to the big play given up yesterday by Rapp — but there's times where the safety position on, you know, third downs or, you know, different times, a little bit of concern there. Can we stop the run consistently to not let a team really shorten a game to where if we do have a turnover, you know, we don't really have the time to fight back? I'm encouraged by the use of this base defense by the Bills, and I think with Milano playing some of his better football, Dorian Williams playing extremely well this year, and then obviously what you have in Terrell Bernard, being able to get in that base package and hopefully be able to stop a, you know, Baltimore potentially in the divisional round of the playoffs. And then we've talked about this in the past on this show, and it's my same concern I've had maybe the last 3 or 4 years, and one of the things that I think has knocked them out of the playoffs is the inability to get pressure on elite quarterbacks with a four-man rush. And I'm not saying that's got to be just the four defensive linemen. They had some really creative rush packages versus Kansas City the last time, where it was either Milano or Bernard or Williams or whoever it is, you know, with 3D linemen on the field in that dime package, where they were able to get some pressure. And I'm great with that, but, you know, can we affect the other team's quarterback when you're playing a Patrick Mahomes, a Lamar Jackson, even a Bo Nix this week? You know, can we get pressure without having to bring the blitz to where we can shut down an elite offense in the playoffs? Because ultimately that's what's bitten us these last few years.
Eric, forgive me if this is redundant, but I missed a couple of weeks, so I'm just curious. Was Denver your preferred outcome? How much, if at all, did you guys talk about that while I was away for the holidays?
Yeah, it was, and I say that, everybody, if you're playing a playoff team, there's going to be strengths and potentially weaknesses to any of the opponents. What you have coming in is a rookie quarterback, but you also have an elite defense. This rookie quarterback, you know, he's had some highlights this year. He's had some lowlights. They have pretty good skill position guys. They can run the football pretty effectively, but the defense is the star of the show there. They blitz the second most in the league. They give up the third fewest points in the league. They might have the defensive player of the year in Patrick Surtain at corner. They have, you know, guys that can really get after the passer up front. And so, you know, they got a really capable defense, but give me Josh Allen and our offense over, you know, up against an elite defense as opposed to maybe a Cincinnati offensive juggernaut coming in and having to keep pace with Burrow and Chase and Higgins and that whole crew. And then, you know, a divisional game, you play them that third time, it's hard to beat a team three times. And, you know, I just saw what McDaniel was able to do from a run game standpoint in the snow a couple of years ago. Don't necessarily want to see that again. And, you know, I'll repeat this because I thought it was a pretty good point last week. Yes, if we played the Bengals and you're able to beat Burrow, Jackson, Mahomes, win a Super Bowl, like, there's your storybook. Right. All of our demons are exercised. Great. But I don't need that. I right. have a parade. I can have a parade come February in Buffalo and not need that, you know, lineup of quarterbacks to face.
Yeah, I'm with you there. One thing, like, I haven't really dug in yet, you know, too far, but I think their prowess on defense and their prowess getting to the quarterback, I want to trust one of the best offensive line performances I've ever seen from a Bills team to be ready to handle that. You know, I feel like their strength, Denver's strength, is something that I think, I don't want to say I can just shut it down or offset it entirely, but I think I'm equipped to handle it.
Absolutely. That's a great point. This offensive line has played at elite level this season. Even yesterday, as I was talking to the Patriots pass rushing coach, he's like a specialized hands guy, this guy Joe Kim, he was bragging on Spencer Brown and how he's developed from a guy who maybe teams were saying, hey, we can attack the right tackle spot, to saying, okay, now both the edges are pretty shored up, maybe we can attack somebody inside. But you have guys playing inside on a really high level. What Aaron Cromer and this group has done up front has been awesome. I give Josh Allen a lot of credit. I give James Cook a lot of credit for at times making them look good, which an offensive line needs. But then there's a lot of times where Josh sits in a clean pocket and isn't taking a whole lot of shots when he stays in the pocket throughout a game.
I think we all can look at the Bills and make a case for them to beat anybody. The Allen point, all of it, offensive line. What about Denver specifically, though? I mean, they gave up 98 yards yesterday. Yes, it was largely backups, but they went out in a must-win setting against Kansas City and just totally blew them out. I mean, the game was over before you got on the plane. So, I don't know. I kind of want to respect that. They haven't played a great schedule, but their point differential is very good, over a plus 100. It's Sean Payton here, who's got a lot of experience coaching in big games. The quarterback is a rookie, of course, Eric, but he's shown well. How dangerous are they?
They're certainly dangerous. I mean, when you look at what Vegas thinks of the game, they got about a 9-point spread right now. So, you know, almost the biggest spread of the weekend. I believe Baltimore's a 10-point favorite over the Steelers. So, but look, this is the playoffs. Everybody's good. You have a young team, especially at the quarterback position, where maybe he plays freer than he would maybe in a couple years where he's got a lot of pressure. Maybe he hasn't won a playoff game, and they're saying, you know, can Bo Nix be the guy to actually win us a playoff game? Right now they're excited to be in the playoffs after, you know, kind of a dumpster fire offensively last year with Russell Wilson at the helm. So, you know, you got a very aggressive head coach, and, you know, you can't surprise onside kick anymore like they did in the Super Bowl, or back against Indy with the Saints. But, you know, Sean Payton and Sean McDermott have a lot of familiarity from their times in Carolina and with New Orleans. I had Luke Kuechly on my Saturday Night Buffalo podcast at one point, and he said that Sean Payton was the hardest offensive coordinator for him to prepare for, and some of that's Drew Brees and the personnel that they had in New Orleans, but he can script a game plan, and he has a lot of familiarity with attacking this defense based upon how many times they faced off in those NFC matchups.
Would you be shocked if Baltimore lost its game to Pittsburgh?
I would be. I mean, to me, Pittsburgh's offense just doesn't have a whole lot to it right now. You know, they didn't look good at all against Cincinnati the other night, and Cincinnati fired the defense coordinator already. So, it would shock me. It would. Now, it's a divisional opponent. They got a lot of familiarity. They have a ton of experience going up against that Ravens offense. But it would surprise me. How about you?
No. Surprise, maybe, but those games are always so close. I guess this last one wasn't. I mean, Baltimore did win that game and cover against the Steelers. I agree with what your point about what the Steelers look like, but it's also a Ravens team that has not really ever had a great game in the playoffs. They've won a few. That's what's needed now, right? I mean, that's what they have yet to prove, and to an extent, the Bills too. It would make for an incredible round two game if they both won, but I don't love it for Baltimore. I didn't love the Chargers either. I think the Chargers are the one road team that could scare Kansas City if they win this week. I think they're the only one of the four potential Chiefs opponents who could beat them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, you have a divisional opponent. They played them tight already this year. And the Chargers are a team, what I talked about, where they can run the heck out of the ball. They can shorten the game. And you make a couple mistakes, you know, it's one and done in the playoffs. There's no, you know, they had the right game script and we couldn't stop them. And so, I certainly think that could be an upset in Kansas City. It truly wouldn't shock me to see Kansas City not make it to the AFC Championship this year. Now, they are getting healthy at the right time. They're, besides last week, obviously playing, not playing a bunch of their starters and obviously not Mahomes. But prior, those last few weeks, they're playing some of their better ball. They're getting some skill guys back. Chris Jones was out. You know, he's going to be back for the playoffs. So, but it still wouldn't shock me. I mean, you play with fire all year like they have. You know, they're extremely fortunate. And
whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Talked about it a number of times on here. They have that one seed right now.
Yep. Very good, Eric. Well, we all can't wait for Sunday. Look forward to that and our conversation next week.
Yep, absolutely. Me too.
All right, as our man. All right, Eric, have a good week. There's Eric Wood on the Western Hotline. His appearance is weekly here on WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, and by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
Updates coming down now from Sean McDermott on Terrell Bernard, Amari Cooper, and more. We'll fill everybody in on that after we return. 803-0550 to talk playoffs. We're here, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. It is Football Monday on WGR.
He mentioned watching the World Series in his office. You know, TV's not on often in there. And it kind of referred to the early 90s Bills in a negative connotation, like the group that just couldn't get it done. And it kind of ticked him off. And he just couldn't stand that was the perception nationally of Buffalo, of not just the Bills, but everything Buffalo, you know, finishing second, always the bridesmaid, that kind of deal. And you can see how much it means to him, and to know if you win now in the playoffs and blast through that door that they've been knocking on for so long, not only is this Bills team remembered forever, Buffalo is never the same again.
Tyler Dunn, golongtd.com, with our morning show today. Check it out on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. What makes this week just a little bit unsettling is that, as we've all had the same hopes and even expectations for the Bills all year, like ever since they lost last year, what's the minimum good season in 2024? Worse than this, but playoffs, wild card would have been like the best, worst season for them this year, if you will. And they have the Chiefs challenge still ahead. You've got the Baltimore thing. Baltimore was the best team in the conference last year. They might be the best team this year right now, just not the best record. So you still have that. This game was never in the conversation or the analysis about this Bills season. Never would it have been about not winning in the wild card if you didn't get the one.
No.
Whoever you're playing this week, even if it had been Cincinnati, a team that might be a little scarier to most people than Denver is. You just have to win this one. And that's a little bit unsettling just in and of itself. That before we can get to, can they do it? They have to do this. And there's no time for a season that ends with a loss to the Broncos.
Right, yeah. And this will not. Who knows? Maybe it'll end up looking like a formality. You know, Bo Nix will throw it to Rasul Douglas a couple times, and it'll just be a kind of a crooked, easy game. But I don't know, man. It's the playoffs. I don't expect anything to be easy. But I think you're exactly right. There's no All right. As ghoulish as we can sometimes be, right, with the disclaimer, like I don't want to dwell on this, but like, what if this happens? What if that happens? You know, these awful scenarios. I don't think I've ever even entertained privately. Like, what if they lose the wild card game? It's not even a space on the board. Like, that's flyover country for us. Like, oh, right. they'll do that. That's what they do. I mean, they don't have to always win this round. They've been good at it so far. I mean, they lost to Houston that first year. Lost to Jacksonville for whatever that's worth. But still, this group here, like this team, since they became Super Bowl-bound Bills, well, they've been money in this round. They've had to play it every year, and they've come through. It hasn't always been easy. You know, I mean, Skylar Thompson was somewhat of a lift, as it turned out, in the first round a couple of years ago. So, I mean, anything can happen. But yeah, losing this game is not. That would truly be jarring's not even strong enough. It really would be a big time shock to, I think, a lot of people's systems, including mine.
Yeah, we would immediately get into sort of what has to change,
right?
If they were to lose to Denver. I mean, I think Denver they're live. They're not a team you would want to lose to with a rookie quarterback and the 7 seed, but they're probably easily better than what Pittsburgh was last year or Miami with Skylar Thompson. I think this team is easily better than those teams.
I'm inclined to agree with that.
Defense is good. Quarterback seems very capable. I mean, he's a rookie. He's not young, though. And they always say about rookies by this time of year, they're not rookies anymore anyway.
Right.
He's coming off an insane day yesterday, and they've been on a pretty good roll. They did lose to the Bengals the week before. Actually, they lost their previous 2 games when I say they've been on a roll. But still, those were tough games, mm-hmm. close games. Yeah. And with them, they're also challenging like the Bills like to think they are, in terms of where is the ball going? I mentioned this list of guys yesterday. When we started on the postgame show watching the Denver game, each play from their first snap was somebody different. Nate Adkins, Jaleel McLaughlin, Devon Vele, Troy Franklin, Javonte Williams, Marvin Mims Jr. for a touchdown, Audric Estime, Lil Jordan Humphrey, then a big one to Sutton. I mean, that's how they started the game. 9 different guys. The Bills would be jealous,
right,
of 9 different guys on 9 plays. It was about that, at least. And, you know, maybe yesterday was such an easy game against the Chief backups that it doesn't really mean a lot. But I do, I think they're interesting in that way, too. They're not predictable, I think, the Broncos. And Sutton's good.
Sutton is good. I think Sutton is, excellent, even. I'll give you. Like, he's not size, speed, like he's got it all. We saw him last year go up and high point a ball in the end zone to beat the Bills or help beat the Bills, right? Wasn't that Russ Moon ball that mm-hmm. got the Bills last year in that meeting? I think you definitely feel more respect for the. You sound like you have more respect for the Broncos than I do, and I don't think I'm disrespecting them necessarily. I'm not reacting to yesterday at all. I don't care how easy it was. It is utterly meaningless to me. You're at home, and you got an opponent that's coming in and just, what, I'm playing their backups. Yeah, I should be able to beat your head in. So, I don't know. Once that game gets going, the Chief backups, but it's been like, you know, yeah, sure, I'm trying to put good tape out there, but, you know, this ain't our day. So I don't look at that as an indicator. Now, you know, they have scored a healthy amount of points since that line of demarcation you mentioned earlier when we were talking about them in the first hour of the show. Like since week 9, their offense has produced points. Well, excuse me, their box scores have produced points. There's a game in there where the Colt game where they did nothing on offense but still won because a couple of defensive touchdowns. So I'm going to be careful about that too. I just would really be surprised if against a team the caliber of the Bills that they find it as anywhere near as easy to move the ball. I mean, forget about yesterday. I just would expect the Bills to be able to handle them on offense, like the Broncos offense, to the tune of 20 points-ish. And however good Denver's defense is, I just cannot foresee a day where Josh Allen and the Bills offense are held down that that severely. So I think it just works. I think the things that Denver that they are good at on defense, particularly getting to the quarterback, aggressive blitzing, I think that plays right into the Bills' strengths. The offensive line's been great. Allen eats up the blitz, so I'm not all the way in yet. This is like, you know, 50,000 feet analysis of the Broncos, but I just think what they do well, I think the Bills can offset.
Sean McDermott earlier this hour said he hopes so when asked about Amari Cooper returning this week and in time for this game. McDermott said that Cooper was not back yet from his personal issue that led to his missing the game in New England. So that'll be something to keep track of. And McDermott also said that Terrell Bernard, no news is good news, trending the right way. It sounds pretty promising there. They may have lost return man Brandon Codrington to an injury. He hurt his hamstring in this game, apparently. Some of the things McDermott talked about earlier today. 9-47 is your betting data. That's 28-19. You would take.
Sure.
28-19.
Yes, I would.
You would take 28-27.
Sure.
I definitely would. So there. How do you feel about how the NFC landed? Detroit wins. Detroit dominated last night.
That game was so boring. I really settled in for 34-31. Like, let's get these teams running loose here. And I don't know, with the playoffs approaching, I don't know if either team did any of this. Maybe you're not showing all your stuff, even though there's a huge stake in the game. It's still, maybe it was like kind of a conservative game. I don't know. But Minnesota just couldn't do anything. At least once they got to the red zone anyway. Would they have like three failed red zone possessions in the first half, I think? It was tough. I just really thought we'd get a big show, like a real tight game, tense game, explosive game, and it really just didn't materialize. So how it shook out, I mean, I'm real interested to see what McVay and the Rams have for the Vikings now. That they, you know, the way they laid down themselves, knowing that they could fall to the four, which they ended up doing, and draw the loser of that game last night. You know, I hope they're satisfied with their decision. That to me was the most interesting thing that was happening on the NFC side. Tampa Washington feels like a game that I'll watch it, but it doesn't hold a lot of intrigue to me.
Hopefully that's fun.
Yeah, hopefully. Green Bay Philly's nice. Love's okay, right? All he did was bang his elbow like Josh did a couple weeks ago.
I guess.
So he's probably fine.
No Christian Watson.
Yeah. Right. That's it. I'm done on the NFC. I don't know. I like Philly.
Detroit went back to being the it team.
Yeah.
Last night, with all the talk about their defensive injuries when the Bills played them and a couple of other games, that performance was like it from the Lions last night. And they get the one, which is a huge... They went back to becoming the Super Bowl favorites. I shouldn't even say back to, because they may never have been. Maybe they were, but with the uncertainty about who the one seed would be in the NFC, that's what that is. Now we know Detroit doesn't have to play as many games as the other teams, so they became... That moved them to the top of the league for Super Bowl odds. And they just looked so good. Gibbs gets to 1,929 yards from scrimmage and 20 touchdowns, with Montgomery scoring 12 himself. Jameson Williams is really happening for Detroit. Laporta had a decent game. He's fine. St. Brown's really good. Up front, they're great. The fourth down thing with the Lions is so in everybody's head that late in this game, they had a fourth and two, what was it, maybe from the six? And the field goal was the play there. Run the clock down and kick it. But they line up, and they're so... It's such a psych job with Detroit. Four Vikings jump offside, you know, and first down. Dan Campbell, after the game at midfield, meets Kevin O'Connell. And he said simply, great job, great season. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Campbell to the Minnesota coach.
Yeah.
That's a... tremendous performance by the Lions last night.
Yeah. Getting that Anzalone back on linebacker is big for them. Like, he's someone that you always notice. I don't know. It's, maybe it's the long hair. I don't know. They missed him. They've missed a lot of guys, but at least they got – he's capable of a big play every game. That's a timely reinforcement, I think, for them.
He was kind of abusing Hockenson in the game last night. Sal Capaccio joins us in less than 20 minutes to talk Bills Broncos and get his thoughts on what yesterday was like in Foxborough. Mike Schoppe and the Bulldog here. It is Football Monday on WGR, which is brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Welcome back. We'll talk to Sal about the Bills' win. Nope, loss yesterday in New England. The Patriots' loss by winning yesterday in New England.
And fired their coach.
Yep. That's an interesting combination of events there. Denver, Sunday at 1. Tonight, we've got the Sabres home to Washington. It becomes a habit, you know. We'll talk to Sal about the Bills' win.
Yes.
They almost always win.
That's right.
Tonight is the Washington Capitals' only visit to Buffalo this season. Washington continues to lead the Eastern Conference in points. They have held up as we've reached January. Team USA repeats at the World Juniors.
Way to go, Team USA.
Fun watch last night.
Yeah.
Overtime win. They really play 3-on-3 for 10 minutes at the World Juniors in overtime. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
The goal was a 3-on-3 goal, and it was like 8 minutes into overtime.
Yeah, I think it might even be longer than that.
Oof.
I think they might go 20, honestly, if they have to. I'm not sure of that, but they definitely play 3-on-3, and it's not 5 minutes, because obviously this was 8 minutes in. So somebody on Twitter said something to me, like, I love this tournament, 20 minutes of 3-on-3. So I haven't read the rule book. And I was, you know, I dipped in and out of that tournament while it was going on through the holidays. So it's great. It's some of the most fun hockey you can possibly ever see, because it's high end guys and it's tournament teams that aren't like working on their trap as hard, probably. So you usually get wild swings in the games, and it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. The Sabres are 3.3% to make the playoffs, according to hockeyreference.com, going into play tonight. It is 19 degrees right now. I wore a turtleneck in here today, a thin turtleneck. And if you want, I'll explain this. Because, of course, I am frying in here today. Boiling.
Really?
Yes.
I got a hoodie on.
How can you manage that?
I feel fine over here.
It is so hot to me right here in this room. All day. Never would have, shouldn't have. I knew when I left the house this was going to be a mistake.
This definitely happens to me. It's not odd that you're hot. It's just, I don't know. I don't feel it today, which is strange.
Monday mornings now I'm doing the ADP Chasing podcast in my basement, and it's pretty tight from when that ends to when I get here.
And you needed this look on the video
feed?
Not
the look, but it's cold in my basement.
Oh, okay.
It's a basement.
Sure, right.
And I'm not mature enough.
Yeah.
At age 53, to know, to have a change of clothes, just to sort of prepare for this. I'm stuck. I'm basically stuck. Once I commit to going to the basement, that's what I'm wearing to work. There's no other way around it.
There's no time to go up to the closet and change?
No time.
It sounds like
it sounds like
a time management problem.
All those steps.
Yeah,
so I knew when I left the house I was going to fry in here, and that's how it feels.
See, now that you've brought it up, now I'm feeling hot for the first time all day.
Well, eventually you were going to. Yeah. Jordan is with us. Go ahead, Jordan.
Hey, guys. Good evening. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for calling us.
Absolutely. Always, guys. Hope everyone's doing well tonight. Happy New Year to you. Had a quick question for you regarding the special teams coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. I know in the past few weeks that we've had a couple issues with, I guess, the punt scheme and them taking advantage of us, them being the other teams. Just curious, Steve, if you think we have that buttoned up a little bit, if you think a little bit more is needed on our end to prevent some of those issues coming up in the playoff weekend.
I would say if you are of the mind to, like, look for things to make you feel unsettled or even nervous about this game, that the return game would be a good place to look. Mims is excellent, dangerous, super speedy, and the Bills have not been super buttoned up on coverage. So I think it's a thing to watch. It's one of those things, regardless of whether it was Mims or someone else. I think when you're looking at a game where the point spread is 8.5, 9 points, you would get to return game. Like, how do you pull the upset? Like, that's a way. And I don't think the Bills have been, exactly to use your phrasing, buttoned up on that stuff. So that could be leaky. So it's something I think to keep an eye on.
Yes, Marvin Mims. He's been kind of running almost a bit in fantasy since entering the league as a rookie, because Sean Payton so many different times has talked about getting Marvin Mims involved, and then he just doesn't. Especially last year when they really weren't good at all offensively. But anytime he would be asked about Marvin Mims, like, oh, that guy is explosive. We got to get him involved. We got to get him touches. And then they just zero touches. Like, whose job is it to get him the touches? But two touchdowns, I believe, each of the last 2 weeks on offense yesterday. And he is fast. Like, he is somebody who can break one either on a return or just on a short pass. Thanks, Jordan. Sal next. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.